I guess, first of all, I'm interested in what got you interested in mathematics.
Well,
how did that start?
I was born and raised in Mexico. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Mexico City. It's a huge monster of a city. And I don't particularly remember being very interested in math when I was young. I mean, the real moment of realization that I really liked mathematics was during high school. There was some kind of competition organized at the high school, and I entered the competition mostly out of curiosity. You know, some friends were going to enter a competition, and I did extremely well, and it was the first time that I realized, maybe I was, 16 or 17, when I realized that, well, maybe math is actually an interesting thing to consider. I didn't know at the time whether there was even a career in mathematics, to be honest. I thought at that time that I was going to be some kind of engineer. In fact, my father very strongly encouraged me to go to agricultural engineering, because my father he was essentially a farmer. He had a lot of land, and he was very interested for me to take over the ranches. So he thought, well, you like mathematics and you like science. This is something for you to do with it. Mm-hmm. And when I went to college,
that would be at the university.
Yes, when I went to college, I actually, before I declared my major, I had a... So, the Mexican system, before, to give you a little bit of background, is very similar to the German or the French system, where there are these national competitions to enter the university. So I had the choice by my grades or my scores to choose anything I wanted. I could choose, medicine, for example. I was very competitive. So when I came, I remember very clearly, I come to my father and tell him, well, I have decided I'm going to request mathematics as my major in the admission for the university, and my father says, no way, I mean, how can you do this to me? He was very upset about it. So it was a little bit of a last-minute decision that I realized that I didn't really know what it was. I mean, to be honest, I just knew it was something beautiful that came somewhat natural to me, and that gave me pleasure, let's say, that gave me some peace, gave me some entertainment, and it was just only later, when I was in the university, that the vision of what is high school mathematics to the vision of what is, let's say, college mathematics came to me. But I still like it. I thought it was even better than what I thought it was going to be.
So it didn't discourage you.
No, it didn't discourage me. It surprised me, definitely. I mean, I will say the first year at the university was extremely challenging. A lot of brilliant students, and National University of Mexico is huge. I mean, it's 100,000 college. So 100,000 students in that university, in one campus alone. There's four campuses. So imagine, it's a massive thing. And you're suddenly, joined together with all these brilliant students from all over Mexico. And Mexico is a large country. So you obviously, first year is a shock, because you come from being the best in your class, and suddenly you are one of the many. And so I wouldn't say the first year of college for me was easy at all, but the surprise of what mathematics was about, the thinking and the beauty of it, the structure, it made me love it even more and be passionate about it. And just a little. Unfortunately, my father never got over it. I mean, he always. He died, unfortunately, without approving to me being a mathematician, I guess. I mean, he died before I finished college, to be more precise, but it's the only sad part of the story, I would say. Yeah. I never managed to convince him that there was a... For example, I think that's part of the theme of my lecture today. I mean, there's so many people that they see mathematics as some kind of... it's like a proof that you are smart and maybe that you have capabilities, but that's about it. And they may not see beyond that. I mean, they don't see a purpose to mathematics. Mm-hmm. Some people are even very well educated, and yet they don't see a purpose. And my father was certainly one of them. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to... somehow, I'm very fascinated by this kind of people, mm-hmm. much more than the people that fear mathematics or the people that are scared of mathematics. Mm-hmm. There's these two, also right. these other kinds of mathematical phobias, let's say. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So what brought you to the United States then?
Yeah, so when I finished college, I was admitted to, when I was finishing, so in Mexico, so we have that, again, the French system or German system where you are supposed to do some kind of thesis at the undergraduate level. Mm-hmm. I think they still do it here in Princeton and some places, like an honors thesis kind of thing. So everybody had to do it, not mm-hmm. just, but only a few people were admitted to the research institute of the Instituto de Matemáticas, mm-hmm. of the National University. So there's a research institute, mm-hmm. About 30 or 40 researchers, full-time researchers, that they also mentor young people. And I was mentored there by some of the leaders of the Mexican community mm-hmm. in discrete mathematics. I mean, Victor Neumann, mm-hmm. Javier Bracho, Luis Montejano, these people. Were my mentors when I was young, and I did my junior thesis with topics in graph theory, topological graph theory. So when I finished that, I wanted to continue. I knew I wanted to do graduate work. While I was waiting, I did a few jobs in industry. I was some kind of software engineer, mm-hmm. And then I went to Cornell for my PhD. So,
although for your MA you did.
That was, yes. So before I did a master's at Western Michigan University. There's a strong connection with graph theory there.
So Gary Charton.
Exactly. Gary Charton was still there.
Yeah.
Arthur White, Alan Schrenk. I mean, there's a lot yes. of. Back in those days, it was a wonderful, how to say, environment. I'm sure mm-hmm. it still is a wonderful environment, but there was a high concentration of people doing graph theory, which was my original interest, as I told you, in Mexico, mm-hmm. right? And so that was a natural choice to go there. Then I transferred to Cornell. My wife had also been admitted to Cornell, so I had a personal reason also to transfer there. And then I became still interested in discrete mathematics, but I changed more to different aspects because there's different people at Cornell and different. So I met Bernd Sturmfels, Lou Villera, the people at the Operations Research Department. I became more interested in applied mathematics too, and computational mathematics, which is my main area of research.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you ended up at UC Davis, mm-hmm. Was that a decision then to stay in this country? Or?
Yes. Well, let's see. It was a long. Let's say it was a postponed decision. I will describe it that way. When I finished with my PhD in 1995, both my wife and I had finished. My wife has a PhD in applied physics with an emphasis in biology, biological techniques, mm-hmm. physical techniques, advanced imaging techniques in biology. So we tried to go back to Mexico, but that right in 1995, it was a terrible time for that. I mean, especially for experimental scientists. So we delayed it more. We managed to get both postdocs at the University of Minnesota. So I was a postdoc at the Geometry Center, the famous World Geometry Center. It was a great opportunity for me to do computational geometry and develop software, which is one of my passions, to develop mathematical software mm-hmm. for research and education. And so we were there. And again, when we finished in 1998, we tried to go back again, and it is what we managed to get positions, but in different places. It was mm-hmm. complicated. So we had the famous two-body problem to be solved. Right. And then, so we delayed it one more time. I was at the Technische University in ETH Zurich in Switzerland. Yeah, so the Institute, yes. Institute of Technology in Switzerland, in Zurich, at the Computer Science Department I was during a year. And during that time, we both managed to get positions at UC Davis, so mm-hmm. that's where we have been ever since.
Mm-hmm. Now, at UC Davis, you're doing more than math. You're in computer science, you're right. also, I'm not sure if it's applied math.
Applied math, yes.
Also, so... is that just an evolution of what you're doing, or is it interesting to combine those?
Well, I'm very fascinated by combining all those. Mm-hmm. I think I have come to realize that the interdisciplinary work is very, very exciting. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of fascinating problems in the intersection of fields. So, for example, I'm very interested in computing, and I think computing allows you to rethink natural questions in mathematics. Mm-hmm. As we know the existence of some object exists by some theorem, but then how do you find it? Mm-hmm. So this is something that always has is in the background of my mind. And also, applications suggest a lot of natural questions in mathematics. And I don't think there should be any... I feel bad when people separate mathematics being applied or pure. I don't think it should be like that. I mean, for me, it's all mathematics, and it's a way of being, almost. It's like a way of thinking, and it's just all mathematical. And whether you apply it or not apply it is, in some sense, irrelevant. It's all the same. Mm-hmm. And for me, the computer, on the other hand, plays a very important role. I definitely is something that very early... Even when I was in Mexico, I took a lot of computer science classes, artificial intelligence. I was interested in low level, hardware programming and things like that. So ever since I was an undergraduate.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think you were mentioning that you're interested in software development, mathematical software.
Right.
What kinds of things are you?
Well, I have one of the most. So I have developed several pieces of software. One was. Essentially used in my thesis to find a counterexample for the first one that I did, to find a counterexample about some question in discrete geometry. Mm-hmm. So this is about the decomposition of convex polyhedra into simplices, mm-hmm. like tetrahedra or triangles. So I was fascinated by the question of how do you decompose a convex polyhedron into mm-hmm. tetrahedra, for example, or in general as d-dimensional simplices. You triangulate it, you subdivide it into mm-hmm. these pieces, and there are several fascinating questions about it, and I developed software of different kinds to attack these questions. That was the first thing. Then later, I became fascinated with questions about counting lattice points inside polyhedra, and which I will mention in my lecture a little bit today, because it has many, many applications. For example, magic squares, counting magic squares, or counting Sudoku arrays. I mean, this can be phrased as counting the number of lattice points on a polyhedron. So I developed a software together with many undergraduates called Latte. And Latte is not the coffee drink in this case. It stands for lattice point enumeration. That's what the abbreviation. But now we have a new version of Latte, actually, that... everything has been done with the collaboration with undergraduate students. So I'm very proud of this piece of software because it's a huge effort. We started in the year 2000, mm-hmm. and undergraduates have been fundamental on the development of this software. I mean, they do develop pieces, and then we discuss of the best way to do it. So now, by now, it's I think the third, fourth generation of undergraduates that have been working on this project. With the support of NSF, and I think it's an example how a very natural entryway for undergraduates that like computers already. Many there are students that are math majors and CS majors, they naturally can access this advanced mathematical research by helping mathematicians develop useful research tools. So it's like the telescope for us. I mean, that's the way I see it. No astronomer today will say, well, telescopes are useless. And so, but you still find mathematicians, unfortunately, that say, well, computers shouldn't be part of the thing. And I find that it's very unfortunate. Mm-hmm. It's misguided, I think. Mm-hmm. One should be allowed to, if you want to solve a problem, you should be allowed to use elephants.
Yes.
Anything, it's a,
Right. And it also sounds like something else that's important to you is students and making sure they get opportunities.
Yes.
Do as much as they can.
Yes, I always say that I'm of course proud of my theorems, but I'm very, very, and I would say even more proud of the many students I've had. Mm-hmm. Over 30 undergraduates have worked with me. Many of them have finished senior thesis, and they have gone to mm-hmm. to graduate school. And that's, I think, very, very, very important to me. The human component. Mm-hmm. I don't think we, as a community, don't do nearly enough on developing talent and getting people hooked into mathematics and making sure that mathematical tools are, you know, publicized. Mm-hmm. We have a wonderful product, and yet we don't advertise it. Mm-hmm. Somehow, I mean, it's we lack. That's one of my main concerns. That we lack advertising. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm so proud, you know, so happy that MAA is really taking leadership on that. I mean, other societies too, of course. I mean, AMS and SIAM, and I know that societies are conscious of this of this problem. But I would like to see more done, like a national effort or some kind of national campaign.
Mm-hmm. At the same time, working with students and working on developing a computer program and so on, you're also continuing your research.
Right.
Are there particular directions that it's taken now?
Well, the most recent interest I have is actually... So every summer I do an REU, mm-hmm. and I always try to find exciting projects for the undergraduates, but they have to be exciting for me too. So mm-hmm. one of the teams, I had two teams this year, and one of the teams was developing a software to do what people call machine learning, and so there's essentially mathematical statistics methodology to mm-hmm. to try to from data extract patterns or learn patterns, mm-hmm. and a mathematician in Berkeley has found a very fascinating connection between learning from data, specifically text data like newspapers and mm-hmm. Articles or books. I would like to learn who's the person that wrote the article. Mm-hmm. So I became fascinated with this. The name of the mathematician is actually Laurent Elgaoui. He's at Berkeley. Mm-hmm. He's a professor of electrical engineering and computer science. Mm-hmm. So he developed this technique based on convex optimization, statistical analysis, machine learning, to analyze text and discover the essential elements of the text, the essential words or phrases mm-hmm. on the text. So, for example, he took New York Times articles and he noticed that many columnists in the New York Times will obviously write about the same types of events during the, mm-hmm. for instance, if Obama made a statement, mm-hmm. well, all of them will have the word Obama, Obama, Obama. Right. So analyzing by frequency is not enough. It's not enough. So you have to analyze the data differently, because just frequency really does not distinguish the writers. You will see that, yes, certainly, Obama, China, and Romney appear as the most frequent words mentioned. Well, that doesn't distinguish, you know, Paul Krugman on the New York Times from, I don't know, another columnist, I don't know, like Christoph, for example. Yes. So what do you do? So then you need to start putting mathematical structure on the text. Mm-hmm. So you think of it as a high-dimensional space, and the words become some kind of vector directions, and you are trying to understand the essential vector directions that define this space. And he was able to recover very, very nice differentiation and identification, let's say, the top 10 words mm-hmm. that differentiate Paul Krugman from other columnists in the New York Times. Or what are the top 10 words that whenever the New York Times writes about China, that's what the New York Times uses versus the Wall Street Journal. So you are trying to learn differences. So that intrigued me completely, and I started investigating this with my students, with my undergraduate students. So I think you're going to like what we did. We took mathematicians, and mm-hmm. we started trying to identify mathematicians. So for example, I took my former PhD advisor, Bernd Sturmfels, and tried to find what are his top 10 words. You know, of course, frequency can be one criterion, but also... we use these convex optimization techniques to try to identify his words, mm-hmm. and also we did it for other mathematicians. Of course, I started with myself to see whether we were getting meaningful results. Right. And it's fascinating. I mean, you can actually tell just from using MathSciNet, for example. If I take mm-hmm. the articles in MathSciNet, I can start identifying mathematicians. Mm-hmm. And this is mathematics identifying mathematicians. This is like so that was one a very very exciting project for that is to me. I'm very interested in optimization myself, mm-hmm. so I was looking at these applications in the intersection of convex optimization with statistics. Mm-hmm. And geometry, essentially, high-dimensional geometry. So that's an example mm-hmm. of something that I find very, very attractive right now.
Mm-hmm. So, if you're looking forward, say 10 years from now, what would you like to have accomplished?
Oh, wow. What would I like to have accomplished? Well, so one of my main worries is the recruitment and retention of mathematics majors in California and, well, I mean, generally in the nation. So I would like to see that 10 years from now, twice as many students take advanced mathematics. I mean, they take calculus beyond calculus, mathematics beyond calculus, everywhere in the nation and in particular the University of California. I think we have a wonderful product, and not enough people know this, and this is a national tragedy, because mathematics allows you to make decisions, better decisions than when you don't use quantitative methods. The problems that we face today need a very well-educated population. So that will be, in some sense, I would like to, in the next 10 years, put some of my energy, not just on developing new mathematics, but also to affect some change in the perception that people have about mathematics and the marketability. If you want, you know, to be a better advertiser of mathematics, I think leaving alone the moral implications or, you know, I think the fact that so many minorities, I mean, especially Latinos, that, you know, is close to my heart. Mm-hmm. The fact that they are not participating in mathematics and STEM is a national economical tragedy. Mm-hmm. I mean, people don't realize the effect that this is going to have in 10 years to the economy, right? I mean, in 10 years, if we don't... So the number of engineers, the number of mathematicians is not growing proportional to what we should be having. And this is something that people don't realize. I mean, it's not just a matter of, you know, some people don't like math. It's like, oh, I don't like milk or I don't like broccoli. I don't think it's that way, personally. I think this is a really fundamental thing that we need to address with extreme force and with I mean, to see it as a priority in some sense.